Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Mr. Stone Payton, another great episode of Atlanta Business Radio. How are you doing, Stone?
I'm doing pretty well, but this is the second week in a row that we've had the doubleheader. We opened up with High Velocity Radio at 10 o'clock. We barely had time to refill our coffee, and here we are in the studio again with a whole bunch of great guests.
That's right.
But we ought to give a shout-out to the Alley Awards. That was an interesting and neat thing that Kevin and his compadre Jessica Park did last night. Kevin, you still awake back there?
But I'm still awake.
Long night for you. What time did you get out of there?
I got out of there around 12:30. Got to bed around 1:30.
And made it back here in time.
Made it back here in time.
Look at that. What a trooper.
I know.
Well, we're glad to have you because this is going to be an important segment, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun and learn a lot. In a little while, a little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Larry Myricks, Walter Mann, Wendy Alpine. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from Lima One Capital, Mr. John Warren. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
We are delighted to have you, man. Lima One Capital, you out there lending money for folks. Are you actually
lending, or you're just kind of accumulating like some other financial institutions?
No, I think we're the only ones that are actually lending out there.
Good for you. So you're right now one of Atlanta's largest private lenders, is that right?
I think we're by far the largest lender in Atlanta.
And then that's mainly for what industry do you lend to?
Well, what we do first mortgage loans to residential real estate investors, so that they can purchase. Right now in this environment, it's normally distressed properties, so that they can purchase those properties and rehab them.
And is the market growing in that area? Are there a lot of people buying now?
Well, right now, according to a recent study in CoreLogic, about 26% of all the homes being purchased in the Atlanta market are being bought by residential real estate investors. So it's a large segment of the overall housing market, and that all of those people are clients.
So the investors, they find you find them. How do you go to market?
We have a lot of different ways. One's just word of mouth. We have a lot of great clients, and we've had great dealings with them, and they're happy with us, so they tell all of their real estate investor friends about us. Another way is through online marketing. We have a top-notch website. We do some advertising. We sponsor different real estate groups here in Atlanta and across the country. So in a lot of ways they find us, they get into the funnel, and then, you know, in the end we close the loans for them pretty quickly, usually 5 to 7 business days.
Now, can you go back in time a little bit and talk about how you started Lima One?
Well, I was a former infantry officer in the Marine Corps. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I wanted to get back into house flipping. I had done some house flipping prior.
Is Lima, is that a military term?
My call sign in Iraq was Lima One, so I wanted to have
I
wanted to have a meaningful name.
So I watch NCIS.
Okay, there you go.
So is the real estate market changing in Atlanta? And of course it is. In what way is it changing? Is it people buying more houses? Is there less inventory, more inventory? What's different nowadays?
Right now the inventory is dramatically low, and one of the reasons for that is you've had huge hedge funds come down like Blackstone. Different private equity funds come down, and they're buying up an enormous amount of rental properties, and they're driving the market right now. So you're seeing a little bit of inflation in terms of the value of the homes as well as the inventories going
down.
So
when they come in and buy, they buy like 50, 100 properties? Is that what they're doing?
For example, last week they bought a package of 1,200.
A package.
So
somebody has a package of 1,200.
Yes.
I'm trying to pay my one mortgage off, and some clown's out there buying 1,200 houses.
Well, Blackstone will buy it off, but you won't be allowed to live in it anymore.
Wow.
So now they're not in the managing house business, are they? They get a firm that manages all those 1,200.
Yeah, they'll just get a property manager in there, and they'll take an 8% cap rate and be happy.
And then, this management firm, I guess, won the lotto, right? To have 1,200. Houses to manage?
Well, this was just one property. Blackstone said they're trying to spend anywhere from $500 to $1 billion in the Atlanta market.
In Atlanta?
Market.
Wow.
So it's an enormous market.
So they're
right
taking
now
all of the homes that the banks had in, what do they call it? There was a term for those homes.
The REOs.
Right. So
what would happen in the past is someone would default on their mortgage, the bank would drag its feet in foreclosing, people would destroy the property. it would finally go to the foreclosure, and some people would either buy it on the courthouse steps or they would buy it once the bank owned it on the retail market.
Right.
What's happening now is a lot of those properties are not getting to the retail market because Blackstone's able to come down and say,
so they think that,
open up your books.
That it's bottom.
I've got $1 billion.
And right, but they must think it's at the bottom, right?
It's definitely, we're past the bottom.
So they're getting good deals.
I think they're getting good deals. I think a lot of times they're overpaying.
Now, when you take all that, you know, thousands of houses out of play at a time like that, how does that impact now somebody who's an individual that's trying to sell their house or buy a house?
Well, what we're seeing is a lot of our clients, I think we have about 30 pre-approval letters out there to clients who we've already underwritten them, and they're just looking for a good quality property. Now, in the past, when we gave a pre-approval letter out to a client, you know, 2 years ago, he would come back within 3 days and say, hey, I've got three properties. Now right. It's going 2 weeks, 3 weeks because the inventory is drying up. But on the positive side, if you're able to get a house under contract, it's going to be a winner for the most part because right. The inventory is so low.
So aside from this Semper Fi undertone, what is it that you think separates Lima from some of the other lenders?
I think the one thing to start off with is we are an actual lender. We have capital. You know, we're fully capitalized when we go into a market. So in Atlanta, we can literally do as many deals as we can possibly find for our clients. Mm-hmm. There's no waiting. We underwrite them quickly, 5 to 7 business days, and we close. You know, that's it. So the customer service, you know, we have a team of over 10 people to serve our clients, and most of our competitors, they're 1 or 2 man shops who really are more brokers as opposed to actual lenders.
So now, how did your military background impact you when you were creating, like, the culture in your firm?
Well, the first thing I did was try to bring on someone that I trusted and understood my culture and what I wanted to develop, and that was John Thompson. He was a retired master sergeant. He was our company gunnery sergeant in Iraq, in Ramadi. So we had worked together in the most intense situations.
So now business is easy compared to that, right?
So you'll learn as a boot lieutenant in the Marine Corps, the first thing you do is make friends with the senior enlisted. And
that strategy works in business.
That
right?
works exactly in business as well. So,
where are you headed with this thing? Where do you think it's going to be in a couple of years?
Well, right now we've opened our third office in November. We opened our office in Charlotte. We also have another office in Greenville, South Carolina. So we are by far, you know, the largest lender in those three states geared specifically towards residential real estate investors. I think the sky's the limit in terms of the U.S. market. I think across the U.S., 22% of all the homes being bought are bought by residential real estate investors. Mm-hmm. They're not being serviced. Banks don't want to loan to them.
Right.
A lot of the private lenders want to give them junk fees and all these hidden costs where they don't have capital to begin with. So our goal is to become the largest lender in the country.
And then you're going to do that just by your organic growth like this, or are you going to franchise? How are you going to
replicate? It'll definitely be organic growth.
So it's just your own company-owned stores around the country?
Yeah, what we've determined is what works for us is to have business development people in different cities, mm-hmm. and then all of the underwriting is done centrally in the company headquarters, and that way we ensure that the customer service is there, and we understand that the lending standards stay where they should be.
So what advice, if any, would you have to offer the real estate investor, and perhaps really we're speaking to the newer real estate investor, to help them prepare and get this done right and get a chance to work with people like you guys?
I think the best thing is right now it's a flipper's market for an individual because the funds have taken out a lot of the small-time investors who want to buy a rental home because probably everyone around this table would want maybe an 18% cap rate. The funds, because they have such enormous amounts of capital to put towards properties, they'll take an 8% cap rate.
Right.
So first of all, it's a flipper's market, in my opinion. Second of all, you need to find trusted people who have an alignment of interest to help you acquire the property, underwrite the property, and then sell the property and make sure the construction's done properly. And we try to do that, you know, without any extra fees. You know, we have an origination fee and an interest rate for our loans, but, you know, we can easily introduce our clients and do introduce our clients to a lot of people, wholesalers who will find the properties for them or realtors. We can introduce them to proven construction contacts as well as proven realtors to sell the property.
So you have to have kind of a pile of trusted advisors around you that you can tap depending on what your need is.
I think one of our selling points is that we have become kind of an ecosystem, the hub of the ecosystem for residential real estate investors, to where you can be that new investor. You can come to Lima One Capital, and then we can introduce you and really teach you how to do this program, as opposed to going to a lot of the trainers and paying thousands of dollars for that.
But isn't that a little bit of a shift? Hadn't previously the hub person, weren't they the real estate agent?
I'm not sure about that. You know, I wasn't around. I was in Iraq probably during that time. But
so you had fresh eyes to look at this problem.
Yeah, I think we just came in and analyzed what do we need to do to really give the best service to the clients, and this is kind of the system that we've come up with.
Now, when you're going to another market and you're trying to find that business development person, are you leaning on your military background in order to find somebody maybe with a military background to be that person?
No, we have not. We have another Marine who is in operations, Mike Kowalski. But other than that, we only have three Marines in the company. You know, we have to get along with people. So we can't have too many Marines in there. But with business development in Atlanta, it's Courtney Newmans. He was... he's a great guy, graduated Georgia, played football, was fullback for University of Georgia, very likable, very hard worker, great networker. You know, all you have to do for us if you're in business development, we usually have the best rates, we have the most capital. So it's really just being able to get in front of someone and convey our programs to them. So
what about when they're in another market and you're not? You know, not in the same town with them.
Well, what we've done for all of our hires is look for people's core values. We don't look for experience in the market. You know, if you're a sales guy, you're a sales guy, and we don't really want you to have experience in our market because you've probably been trained
bad habits.
Probably been trained improperly, according to us. So we look for good people and then train them. You know, that's really the Marine Corps philosophy. I wasn't a big gun nut before I went into the Marine Corps, and they trained me on military tactics and techniques. So we kind of followed that into our business.
So is Lima actively recruiting business development people now? Is that part of where you're putting your energy right now?
We just hired a company treasurer that's worked out very well. We've just gotten so large, we really needed to build the financial
side. Somebody to watch the money?
Exactly.
Wow, what a great problem to have, huh?
Yeah, we're very lucky in that regard. So we hired a treasurer. We're also looking for a business development person in Charlotte right now. So if you know of anyone, you can send them our way. And we're really internally debating what's the next market for us.
You know, how do you choose a market?
I think it's based on some of the characteristics that have made us successful in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta's a thriving residential real estate investor market, and we just look for those same characteristics across the country. So Florida's up there, Texas, you know.
Are you following or lagging those hedge funds that are buying thousands of properties in the market?
I think the hedge funds have by far been lagging our clients. You know, the individual client always finds.
So they're following you.
They always find the good deals first, and then the hedge funds come and say, wow, 20% cap rates. And then by the time the hedge funds get done with it, it's down to 8% cap rate. So I think they're following our clients.
Where can people go, both investors and those that may be interested in a career with Lima One?
They can go to our website, www.limaonecapital, all spelled out, and they can contact us at info@limaonecapital.com.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us today,
Thanks for having me on the air.
Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, definitely.
All right, Lee, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from Mega Sports International, Mr. Larry Myricks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Did you learn anything out of that last conversation?
I learned I don't have enough money to buy his kind of property. I wish I did, though.
Not yet.
I need to invest.
Now, I know you're here to talk about the corporate challenge, but before you do, how about a little bit of an overview about your business, Mega Sports International? What's the mission, purpose? What are you guys out there trying to do for folks?
Well, you know, kind of in a nutshell, Mega Sport International is a sports marketing promotions company. We do a variety of events. We do the corporate challenges. We do clinics. We do just all kind of learning activities, mostly in the sports area. You know, my background is track and field, so we do a lot with track and field folks, track and field coaches, as far as the teaching is concerned.
So John has his buddies in the military. You have buddies that are track and field people that's part of your team?
Absolutely. Track and field folks, Olympians.
So you're an Olympian, right?
I am. I am. I've been on four Olympic teams. I have a bronze medal in the long jump from the 88 games in Seoul, Korea.
Do you
that
bring
might
that
be
with
a first.
You? You don't bring that with you in your pocket? I'd always carry it with me under my shirt or something.
Well, had it been TV, I would have brought it. But since it was radio, they'd never be able to see it. So,
is that a first? Is it the first Olympian or medalist that we've had in the Glen Lake studio? I know we've had Olympians on before. But
do you know Jeff Galloway? Is he an Olympian? He's an Olympian. I don't know if he won
what
a medal.
What sport is he?
He was a marathon runner.
Not familiar with him.
He owns
not
Fidipides,
sure.
The...
You're just making,
I'm just
stuff,
making
up.
Stuff up.
He must be, because I ain't kidding.
They all know each other. All right, so this this challenge. Tell us a little bit about this challenge.
Well, the Atlantic Corporate Challenge is basically 5 weeks of friendly competition in 23 different sports and games tournaments. I mean, we do everything from soccer, flag football, 3-on-3 basketball, dodgeball, all the way down to like poker, spades, dominoes. We've got something for everybody, you know, in the Corporate Challenge. And it's basically a big team building, company pride, company morale boosting kind of event.
So now your objective then is to get like Coca-Cola to participate with against UPS, or is it small companies, or like what's the size of the company that kind of typically participates?
Actually, companies of all sizes. We break the companies up into divisions based on the employee headcount. In other words, if you were like a Coca-Cola, then you'd put maybe 3 or 4 teams in each event, and you compete in one division. If you're a company with, say, 100 or fewer employees, you compete in a separate tournament or a separate division, and you compete against companies of your own size.
Now, so you just waltz up to the halls at Coca-Cola and you say, hey, gang, I want you guys to get involved with this. Right, I got some other kind of, what's the, I don't know, what's the word, value proposition? What are you telling these people to get them all fired up? So, yeah, we'll do this.
I wish it was that easy.
Who's your good poker players, you know, how are you, you know, finding that out?
Last year, a company called Jabion, I believe, won our poker tournament.
Jabion Consulting, yeah, we've had those guys in the studio. But yeah. No, how do you go have these conversations? How does that work?
Is that
you
an know, HR? You talk to HR
people? I talk to HR, talk to owners, depending on the size of the company. Sometimes it could be a community relations person. But, I mean, for us, it's just introducing them to who we are and what we do and just explain the benefits because it's, like I say, it's great for team building. If you want to build some company pride, company morale, if you want to reward your loyal employees for all the hard work they've done, it's a great intro to getting people to live a healthier lifestyle and that kind of stuff. So, as a matter of fact, we had a couple of companies last year who participated that went out, they started wellness programs after being involved in ours. Yeah.
And so you can do a lot of this stuff on site, or tell us a little bit about the logistics, the mechanics. Are we all gathering in a central location, or we can do some stuff on site at Coke, and then we'll go meet? Mm.
Right. We're gathering all over the place. I mean, okay. We, as an example this year, we'll have our kickoff party, flag football, soccer, softball, and our award ceremony and company picnic at the DeKalb Southeast Athletic Complex. We do our bowling tournament with Stars and Strikes. We'll have a basketball tournament at North Atlanta High School. We're just all around. We get venues in and around Metro Atlanta. We try to move things around so nobody's having to drive too far.
Dodgeball is your sport. If you can dodge a wrench,
you can dodge a ball.
There you go.
So now what if, like in our team here, we have people that have certain skills. Mm-hmm. Like we're excellent jugglers. So can we create a juggling event?
You know what? I can add a juggling event for you next year. If you promise me you'll register, I'll do a juggling event for you next year.
So now, so how does it work? I'm a company. Is it too late for me to sign up, or can I still sign up for this?
Well, actually, we did close registration on April 1st. We are now building all of our tournaments because we've got 23 tournaments to go through, and we start on May 4th. That's when our first tournaments are. So, yeah, for this year, it is
it's too late.
But we'd love to have you next year, and you got plenty of time to get ready for that one. So, yeah, we've closed registration for now.
Now, is an event typically one day, or it takes several weeks to complete the entire event for all of the participants? How does that work?
The events are typically one day. We'll have the events either during the work week. We usually start at 6 o'clock, and we go till we're done. And it's usually anywhere from 6 till about maybe 10 to 11, depending on the event. And then we also have some events on the weekends. But, yeah, we complete them the same day we start them.
All right, so let's back this thing up a little bit. I want to learn more about the backstory. You're a successful track and field person. You win a bronze medal, and then after that, fame and riches? Or how does a track person make a living after they win a medal, and then how did that morph into what you're doing now?
Well, I was probably not the typical track and field person, first of all. I graduated from Mississippi College, and right out of college, I went and got a job. And I worked my job while I developed my track and field career as well.
Uh-huh.
So I came out of college. I worked for the governor in Florida on his Physical Fitness and Sports Council. Left there, moved to California, worked for a bank for 5 years in a management training program. I also worked for a company called Onsite Laser Medic as a sales manager for about 3 years. So I just kind of did different things while I, you know, was an athlete as well. So all the things I did in corporate America kind of prepared me for what I'm doing now, and I really enjoy it.
Including the sports, the athleticism and all that, and the corporate work, it all came together and,
absolutely,
and equipped you to do this.
I mean, because an athlete, I was on a lot of teams. I was on Olympic teams. I was on World Championship teams. I made World Cup teams. And as a team member, we competed in tournaments because all those things are tournaments. That's what the Olympic Games is. You know, and so I had the privilege of winning medals in every major track and field event. So I know how much fun it is. I know what it means to you know, walk up and get a medal put around your neck and kind of be able to go home and share it with friends and family. And so that's a lot of the fun. And what I do now is when we present folks medals for winning, you know, one of our tournaments. And we give gold, silver, and bronze medals to the winners of each one of our tournaments. And then the company that gets the most points, because they get points based on how they finish in a tournament. And at the end, the company with the most points gets to keep the traveling trophy for a year.
And who won last year?
Investment Alliance won last year. And they're back to defend their championship this year. And they've dropped the Alliance and are now just Investment. They're excited. So we're excited. We're looking forward to it.
Now, do you have a favorite story or experience from last year or some previous year that really stands out for you?
You know what? When I started putting this thing together, one of the things that was really important to me was that people kind of got my vision, and my vision was I wanted to motivate people to, number one, be more active physically because I'm an athlete. It's a part of what I do every day. I go out and walk 3 miles a day. That's kind of my quiet time, exercise time, and I wanted to kind of get people involved in an event that might convince them or encourage them to go out and be more active. And last year, several people came up to me and said, hey, you know, this makes me see I need to start doing something physically. What can I do? And then, you know, I had at least two companies who the HR directors came to me and said, you know what? I want to tell you this. One of the things you talked to us about was health and wellness programs and initiatives. And we want you to know that because we're involved in this and we kind of see where our employees are physically, we're going to put health and wellness programs, you know, in our companies now.
Man, you must sleep really well at night. I mean, that's going to be incredibly rewarding work to know that you're having that kind of impact.
Very much so. And I've always heard that the best jobs to have are ones that you enjoy, that you're good at, and that people can kind of, you know, see your vision, enjoy it. And it's kind of all coming together for me. I really am enjoying it. I do sleep well at night, too, by the way.
Now, are you doing the corporate challenge in other markets or just Atlanta?
You know what? We actually, we're in 5 cities in the Southeast. We have Atlanta, Chattanooga, Birmingham, Jackson, Mississippi, and Columbia, South Carolina. Because Atlanta, ultimately the goal for me is to, over the next probably 5 to 10 years, to grow this thing to 35, 40 cities. Anywhere there's a bunch of companies, we can put together a corporate challenge, you know, and we see the benefits, they see the benefits. So it's just, you know, us working and being patient and just kind of, you know, watching it grow.
All right, so we're past the line on being part of this year's tournament, but is there a way for people to engage and go watch? And what's the best way for folks to reach out and learn more about both this year and next year?
You know what? Our website is www.corporatechallengeatl.com. And if you go to the schedules page, you can see where all the events are, when they are. And if it's a weekly event, it's 6 o'clock start time. If it's a weekend event, it's either 9 in the morning, or with the exception of, I think, our billiards tournament starts at 6 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. So that'll tell you kind of where we are. Anytime you want to come out and watch, we'd love to have you. We're also working on you streaming our finals, the medal rounds of all the events this year. So it's the first time we're trying this, so hopefully we'll get it all right. But you can check us out on our Ustream channel and just need to look up either Corporate Challenge Network or Atlanta Corporate Challenge on Ustream.
Very cool. All right. How about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. Love to.
Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from Alpine Communications, Miss Wendy Alpine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really good to be here today.
So what do you think? In billiards, ping pong, pogo?
What's your sport,
Wendy?
What's
your sport, Wendy?
Let's Let's see. A little running, a little tennis.
We got to. We got both those.
A little yoga. I don't know how you can compete with that. I'm not sure how. How many downward dogs can you do? I don't know. But I think it sounds like a really exciting company and event, especially how you're bringing wellness to companies in this whole situation in our country with obesity and companies looking to.
It's a blast.
So I bet you could really help an outfit like this get the word out, couldn't you?
I was writing notes thinking, okay, what are the unique aspects of these two companies? And that's kind of what we do at Alpine Communications is kind of interview companies like that, find out what their specialty is, what the benefits are. You know, we try to, sifting through to find little golden nuggets to see what sets you apart from the competition. And just hearing you with your athlete background, your athletic background and how that could, that's part of what makes your business successful and how you can parlay that into media relations and as well with the Lima Capital. I love anything with the Marines, the military background. I think, there's so much that you bring to business and the way you do business, the way you work with folks. Again, that's something I would probably leverage in different ways.
So that's a good tip for our listeners. To find their kind of secret sauce, the thing that makes them unique in the marketplace.
Right.
Now, do you have any kind of tips on how to bubble up that kind of nugget, that golden nugget?
Well, a lot of it is, finding, interviewing the company and really kind of finding out what makes them tick. How do they differentiate themselves from their competition? What kind of special programs do they have? If they have any kind of special events going on, as we heard here before about the corporate events. That's kind of a newsworthy type of thing because then you can contact the local, say, TV media. It's very visual. You can have them come out. So you try to look for opportunities in which the media would be interested. But one of the main things is, a lot of times companies think they're the greatest things in sliced bread, and we have these greatest products and that kind of thing. I'm sure you hear it all the time.
From time to time.
Sometimes. Yeah. And probably a lot of them do, but a lot of it is kind of figuring out, why should I care, whether it's the consumer or the business community? What is it about your product or service that would make somebody care about what you're doing?
Now, when you're working with companies in today's world, it's a different media world than it had been over the last, 10, 20 years especially. How do you help a company decide if their investment in PR should be there or should it be in advertising or it should be a blend between the both? How do you work with your clients to help them kind of maximize the most of their investment?
Lee, that's a great question. In fact, I did a blog post about the difference between public relations and advertising because a lot of people really don't understand what public relations is.
Right, and it's different today than it was when I was in college, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of it, it's about creating brand awareness, establishing companies as thought leaders, generating demand for their products and services, and through these different ways. For example, social media is a great way to get your message out. But the first thing you need to do is start with a plan. Just like in business, you need a business plan. With public relations, you need to come up with a strategic plan. What your goals are, what your objectives are, and then the strategies and vehicles that you can accomplish that.
So how do you go about hiring a PR firm? How do you choose them? I wouldn't even know what questions to ask or what to look for. Give us a little guidance on that, if you would.
Sure. Well, a lot of it is, it's always like you work with the people you like, so a lot of it's personality. You want to definitely interview two or three companies or consultants. A lot of it is experience. A lot of PR is media relations, which is working with the local, national, regional media, whether it's print, broadcast, online. And so you want to make sure that the company that you choose has that experience, has actually gotten results, because in the end, results matter, right? So we want to make sure that they have a track record. You want to make sure that, say, they're known in the community, they're aware of the different media that are out there. You want to make sure that they're good writers. Maybe you want to see a writing sample to make sure that, the writing is what you're looking for. And then, of course, referrals and that kind of thing, resources.
Now, how do you, I'm sure you have a list of the different media outlets that you work with. You have to have a relationship with them in order to place these, when your client has an appropriate story or something that's of interest, you want to make sure that the appropriate media contact knows that, right? You have to have good relations like that. How do you manage that relationship? You want to let them know, but you don't want to be too, you know, relentless. But you got to be relentless, right?
Right, exactly. Being tenacious.
Managing that relationship, how do you do that?
That's a great question. Again, it's all about relationships. It's mm-hmm. You know, whether it's with a client or with the media, it's all about establishing those relationships. So one of the things I do is, you know, you have to read. If you want to pitch an outlet, you have to know who's writing for it and what kinds of stories they're writing for. You don't want to pitch a sports story to someone who's covering healthcare, that type of thing. So you really have to be familiar with the reporters and what they're writing about. You can follow them. Today, like you said before, Lee, that it's so with the internet, there's really no excuse. There's Twitter, there's Facebook, you know, blogs.
Right, there's lots of ways to interact with people today.
Exactly. So that's what I do. And then one of the things I was talking to one client about is you develop what's called a media pitch, which is actually a written pitch that you kind of organize your thoughts and come up with kind of a story idea that you think the reporter might be interested in. It might key into a trend, might be an event, that kind of thing. And then, you know, there's ways to contact the reporter and follow up. But it's like a blend of art and science, I say. It's kind of a feel, like a gut feeling, kind of like when you're out there in Iraq and things, you know, it's kind of a gut feeling and it's a give and take. I feel at Alpine we have really good relationships with the media because we've been told that you don't give us stories that are going to be relegated to the junk pile. You know, that we know when you call, it's worthwhile.
It's something going to be good.
Yeah.
Now, how do you manage the expectations of your client? You know, I'm sure you get clients that are like, okay, I'm hiring you, so by next week I expect to be on the cover of the Wall Street Journal and then Time Magazine the week after that because I'm paying you a lot of money. So these are the things that – because in their mind, you know, when they were buying advertising, for instance – they could get a full-page ad in Time Magazine if they wrote a check.
Right.
Now, to get a full-page story in Time Magazine, you can't write a check for that, you know. But they're theoretically hiring you to get that placement. So how do you manage those expectations?
Well, that's a good question. Again, you really have to talk to the client and ask them, you know, some basic questions like have you done any media in your local community? Have you done the radio show business?
So you got to kind of earn your way up, right?
You got to earn your way up, right? You got to start in your community, get the word out there, and then, you know, move beyond that. Because a lot of times you don't want to be talking to the Wall Street Journal until you've talked to...
On your first interview,
right? On the first interview.
You don't want to mess that one up.
No, that's not something you want to mess up. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go on into working with the media. You know, there's media training. So what kind of messages do you have? You need to speak in sound bites. Make sure, you know, you have 2 to 3 messages you can convey, that kind of thing. So, you know, you really have to set expectations. Not everybody can be in the Wall Street Journal. And that used to be Oprah was the big thing, you know, but NBC Nightly News. And we have gotten clients onto those media outlets, but it takes time and got to have a good story. That's the bottom line.
Is there a rule of thumb, a percentage of revenue or a percentage of marketing budget that one should set aside? Because, I mean, this can get expensive if you don't put your arms around it and know what you're doing. What advice do you have on that front?
Yes. I think like anything in business, you do need to set aside some dollars for public relations / advertising. I mean, advertising, it could get really expensive. You know, it's not effective if you just do one ad one time. You need to do ads over a period of time, and then there's many different ways to approach it. Same thing with public relations. It's a line of business that you really need to, you know, set aside dollars for. And it depends on what you're looking for. If it's a local market, may not be as expensive. If you want to do national media relations and national PR, it probably would be a lot more money. So
now, how do you answer the question when they go, well, what's going to be my ROI on this investment?
It's a good question, you know, because public relations is all about building brand awareness, could be getting your name out in the community, different mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, one way is, you know, media relations. So if you get a placement, whether it be radio, TV, online, you see that placement. And then hopefully it helps with SEO, because I've had a client tell me recently that we had gotten them a front page AJC business story, which is hard to get these days, and it really helped with their you know, search engine optimization, search engine marketing, because people started hearing about them.
Now they find them when they search them. Now they find them, and that's a good thing to find about them, a front page AJC.
Exactly, and that's, you know, happening more and more. A lot of things are going from offline to online. You could do surveys, you could do questionnaires, you know, before and after to measure, you know, awareness and things mm-hmm. like that. just reputation in the community, what people are saying, what employees are saying. That was another good point, because that's another form of public relations is employee relations and helping them feel good about their company. Employees are can be used as your brand ambassadors if done right. So.
Right.
Now, so you were talking about social media a little bit earlier. You touched on it. But you can take an interview like this one, and even if it's in a smaller venue, you can repurpose that and put it in different platforms and reach a whole another group of people, right?
Exactly.
And that's not to be dismissed. I mean, there can be a lot of power in that, right?
Right. I mean, you know, today, you know, radio, I love radio. It's such a great medium just because, you know, hearing the voice, you can really get a sense of the personality. And something like Atlanta Business Radio X is a great forum for businesses to really get the word out about them. It's, you know, it's harder and harder. There's fewer and fewer media outlets out there, and having mediums like this is really important. And then, like you said, they can repurpose it. You can put it on your website. You can send it to clients through, you know, HTML newsletters. You can really get the word out about your business that way.
And that's part of what a PR firm like yours would help them with, right?
Exactly.
Like if that person was on the front page of the AJC, you can now take that article and then make it a newsletter post. It could be a direct mail piece.
There you go.
There's like 10 different things you can do with that one placement.
Exactly. You can take quotes from the article and put it on the website, use it as testimonials. There are many, many different ways, you know, through blogs. You can repurpose it through blogs. So there's a lot of ways that you can use that.
So you're right here eating your own cooking a little bit, right? Come to the local radio station, have
wonderful.
A conversation, and you'll probably repurpose this this kind of stuff. And in the ongoing relationship with a client, are you doing formal media training, or just depends? You're giving them some kind of general guidance, and hey, when you go do this one, it's more long form, and you don't have to do the bite size, but when you get over here, you better have your sound bites.
Right. Yeah. So it could be informal to formal. In some cases, it's a matter of sitting down with the client or via email and just letting them know what the tone of the interview is going to be. I always talk to the reporter in advance and try to get as much information as I can about what's the interview going to be about, what are you looking for. I'm trying to help them. And that's the one good thing about PR. You know, I see it as more of a partnership with the media. It's not antagonistic. It's more like, how can I help you? You're helping me. And so we try to get as much information as possible up front. And then making sure the client understands their two or three messages and is able to repeat them in such a way that they come across naturally. And then other cases, you can actually do formal media training with a video camera and seeing how people...
Ouch. Boy, that's an unforgiving medium, isn't it, video?
It's hard.
It's not for everybody.
No, well, luckily we don't have that here. But, so in some cases that's helpful too, because you're on TV, there's a lot of things, gestures, smiles, how your jacket, you know, sitting on your jacket is one of the most basic tips, so the jacket's not... you know, kind of what you're wearing clothes wise, you don't even think about it. You don't want to be wearing like a checkered shirt, you know, on TV. So,
now, do you have a sweet spot of types of clients that you work with?
Yes, at Alpine, we work with a lot of healthcare companies, both healthcare technology companies, hospitals, manufacturing companies. We also work with other technology companies. One of our clients is in the time and attendance business and has gone from, you know, the punch clocks to face recognition.
Sure, wow.
So that's another client of ours. Some nonprofits. We work with some walks, like the 2-Day Walk and Aid Atlanta. We've worked with them. Our newest client is a healthcare marketing client that connects doctors with patients to lower out-of-pocket healthcare savings. And so just this whole thing was happening with the Affordable Care Act and trends. And so one of our specialties is really trying to find out, you know, key into the trends that are going on in the world and how the companies, even just in a micro way, could fit into that.
Right.
So
step one with you, if our listeners want to reach out, first we'll just have like a phone conversation or sit down and have a cup of coffee and you'll learn about what's the first couple of steps in the process of working with you?
Right. Well, a lot of times it starts with just a phone conversation and seeing where the company is at as far as are they ready for PR, because in some cases they're not. They don't have the products aren't
ready. They don't have
ready.
Enough to talk about.
They don't have enough to talk about, or you know, they have this great product, but it's not ready to roll out in the market yet. You know, an understanding, they have a website, you know, you need a website, but some companies, we just have this one page or revamping or whatever, but you want to have all those things in place. So we talk about, do you have any press materials, you know, do you have a press release, bios, things like that. We try to figure out what do they have and then what will they need. And sometimes it's over the phone, you have to you know, qualify or pre-qualify folks because they may not be ready. They may need a business coach, you know. In other cases, we do meet with them. And we want to get to know who the people are, who the clients are, and then we take it to the next level with a, we put together a PR plan, a proposal.
All right. So where can our listeners go to learn more and have an opportunity to reach out and have a conversation with you?
Okay. Well, they could visit us at www.alpinepr.com. And on the website is a lot of information about how to get in touch with us and the kinds of services we provide.
Very informative conversation. A great deal of help. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, Lee, we now have with us, I'm probably going to butcher the company name, but we'll find out for sure in a little bit, from Zono Sanitec. Wow, I got a thumbs up. Please join me in welcoming to Atlanta Business Radio this morning, Mr. Walter Mann. How you doing?
I'm doing great today.
You know, I usually say, how you doing, man, but it didn't seem appropriate.
I know,
won't work.
So you got to tell us about this outfit. What are you guys out there trying to do for people?
Well, what Zono does is protects the population by killing germs. Imagine a refrigerator sized appliance that everything that goes in it, the bacteria and viruses are dead. Everything from cell phones to crayons to books to baby toys.
So, and this was going so well until he had me imagine my refrigerator, which hasn't been cleaned out in a week and a half because we were in Denver. My wife was in California. And, man, if you've got kids, you got all kinds of germs, right? Like it's a multiplier effect, yeah?
Absolutely. And the more kids, the more germs.
So you're, what is it, a device? Is it a spray? What do you guys do?
It is an appliance. It's a device.
It's an appliance. So I'm putting things in this appliance to de-germ them?
You got it. Putting things into the appliance to kill all the germs. With no user exposure to chemicals, no use of liquid chemicals, just a little bit of electricity and a tiny bit of water.
So how do you know if the thing's working or not? Because you can't see the germs, right?
You absolutely cannot see the germs.
Is there like a meter that's telling me, oh, 40% of my germs are dead, 100?
There is a very high-tech sensor inside that records the environment inside the sanitizer. And our environment has been tested by an independent laboratory and by the University of Georgia to sanitize both bacteria and germs. Bacteria and virus. And sanitize means kill 99.9% to a verifiable government standard.
An impact on child sickness. I mean, I would think that this would bring down the colds and the runny noses and all that stuff. Is it really doing that?
Absolutely. Our main clientele is the child care industry. So imagine a daycare provider purchases a Zono for his center. We just had a provider that bought one as a trial unit. She's got five centers. After less than 40 days, she called me up and she said, I'll take them for the rest of the centers based on the difference in sickness between the center that had the Zono and the rest of our inventory.
So now can I put the kid in there?
No, you can't put the kid,
in there.
No kids, no animals.
But you can put like all the toys. Like at the end of the day, the daycare center can put all the toys and blankets and all that stuff in there?
Absolutely. Soft cloth, hard surfaces. If it'll fit in the Zono, it will sanitize it.
And how long does it take to de-germ anything?
30 minutes. It's a 30-minute cycle. They put the stuff in, hit the button, walk away. They get a nice little LCD screen display 30 minutes later that says conditions have been met. Everything is sanitized.
You've been Zonoed. You know what? This is going to be like the Carfax. Like, people don't want to buy a used car anymore unless you show me the Carfax.
Right.
People are not going to go to the child care place and say, are you Zonoed?
Absolutely. Right. In fact, one of the ways that our clients manage their inventory of toys is they have a card. One side says Zono me, and the other side says I've been Zonoed. So if you know there's stuff sitting around in a bin, a teacher can immediately look at it and know, hey, that's sanitized stuff or that's stuff that needs to be sanitized.
So do you recommend they do this every day?
Well, state regulations mandate that a child care facility sanitizes every day.
What are they doing now if they don't have a Zono?
They're doing bleach and water. They're doing other sanitizing chemicals. And in some instances, unfortunately, with, say, something like a crayon, they're doing nothing because you can't dip a paper-covered crayon in bleach.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about my child care provider dipping crayons in bleach. How about residential market? You got some designs on going to the residential market with this stuff?
We think the residential market is probably a year or two out. We're working on driving our costs down through our industrial clients.
Would you loan more money on a residential, on a house that's been zonoed, John?
I'm sure it would get a better deal.
So it's down the road a piece, but I mean, there obviously is some application for it in residential.
Absolutely. We're using right now some very expensive electronic technology. And, you know, as we scale bigger, we may have a chance to drive the price down on that.
So now how did you come up with this idea?
Well, I spent 22 years with Kimberly-Clark producing medical devices and other sanitary devices that had to be produced in sanitized conditions. So I kind of knew how to do it. I was doing some medical device and food consulting when a teammate of my son's from La Crosse got methicillin-resistant staph in his throat from his mouth.
That's MRSA?
That's MRSA. And basically, he played the summer season of lacrosse, chucked his mouth guard and all of his equipment in his bag, and left it to cook in the garage for a month, then chucked the mouth guard back in his mouth.
Nothing good's going to happen from this, right?
That's right. And my wife goes, can't you do something about this? And I said, yeah, I think I can. And so I built the prototype in the garage.
So there's an application for sports teams.
Application for sports equipment. There's an application for military equipment. Kevlar vests cause tremendous infection. You know, the soldiers sweat in them. MRSA is a salt-loving organism, so it is a perfect breeding ground.
So is the could you characterize this technology as green? I mean, it doesn't seem like this causes much problems either. Right? You know, some inventions cause more problems than they solve.
It's very green. Ozone is what we use, the chemical we use. Ozone is 3 oxygen atoms. The oxygen you breathe every day is 2. We use ultraviolet light inside of our zono to turn a percentage of the oxygen in the air into ozone. We use that ozone and humidity mixture inside the zono, which we have our patent pending on, to sanitize everything inside of the zono. And then we use a catalytic converter, much like the catalytic converter in your car, to turn the ozone back into plain elemental oxygen. So when you open the door of the zono at the end of the cycle, you got the same oxygen that was in there before you closed the door.
So now your challenge is to get daycare centers? Is that your first group that you're going after, daycare centers?
Daycare centers, because the state requires them to sanitize.
They have to do something.
Right.
So now you have right now one company doing this, or is this rolled out all over the place?
We're in, we've got over 40 clients now. Our first big break was with Kids or Kids.
Uh-huh.
And we're now in 20% of the Kids or Kids nationwide. And we are required, a required piece of equipment for a new Kids or Kids opening up.
Oh, so you're working with the franchisors?
Yeah, we're working with the franchisors. We've also got independent clients. We've got Goddard School clients. And we're just rolling out franchisor or child care group by child care group.
So are you attacking this as a corporate-owned entity, or are you selling franchises to sell this around the country?
We sell to our clients, and we're now looking to sell to larger chains of daycares as opposed to franchisors. Franchisors don't have a lot of leverage over their franchisees after they've signed and bought.
Unless they're brand new.
Right. The brand new Kids or Kid ones are required to have zonas. And that's 5 guaranteed sales so far this year.
Right.
What an exciting time for you, man. This is fantastic. I mean, you're genuinely helping people, and as you should, you're going to make a comfortable living from it, aren't you?
Well, I hope so. We produce our product completely in the United States, so we're helping a company in Michigan to keep their order books full, and we're very, very excited.
So how is this shift for you, working for a big corporation, to being an entrepreneur? How are you handling that?
Well, one of the nice things, when I worked for Kimberly-Clark, I spent some time overseas working in some smaller divisions, which was kind of entrepreneurial because we were a long way away from the home office. But what I've had to learn a lot about marketing and closing sales because never had to do that.
When you say, hey, I'm with Kimberly-Clark, they're like, yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Exactly.
And you're like, I'm with Zono, and they're like, who? It's a different conversation, huh?
It's a whole different conversation, and I never had to close the sales with Kimberly-Clark. I just had to provide the solution.
Right. So what was that like? You go through sales training? How'd you get up to speed on that, or you're just kind of learning as you go?
I was really lucky to hook up with a couple of very experienced entrepreneurs that facilitated my introduction first to Kids Are Kids and to another corporate client. And they sort of helped me learn how to sell. And then after I had a couple of salespeople that just completely crashed and burned, I realized that, hey, if we're going to pay the mortgage, I got to learn how to sell these things.
So is there a website? What's the best way for listeners to reach out and learn more?
The best way to learn about Zono is www.zonosanitech.com. Zonosanitech.
All right. Good stuff. Well, thank you, Walter, for being part of the show.
And thank you guys so much for the opportunity to talk about Zono. We really love what we do.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.